This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well. Sex, health and well-being in our LGBTI communities.
Presented by Joy's sponsor, Thorn Harbour Health.
Welcome. You're listening to Well, 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 brought to you by Thorn Harbour Health each week here on Joy 94.9. My name is Adam and I'm your host for this evening. I am joined in the studio by the fabulous Renee. How are you this evening?
Hi, dolls. I'm wonderful, thank you. I mean, a little bit hoarse, but aside from that, I'm wonderful. Thanks.
And speaking of horse, how was Northside Bazaar? Because I assume that's why you're out.
Speaking of horse, I thought you meant like horses.
Your health.
Oh, Northside Bazaar was fantastic, and all of the listeners got to hear us talk a lot about Northside Bazaar, and thanks to everyone who came along and supported the event. We made quite a lot of money for Joy and the David Williams Fund at Thorn Harbour Health, and we had a really fun time doing so.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. It was, I must admit, it's the first time that I went.
Was this your first one?
Yeah, I've previous occasions have not gone.
And you spent a little bit of money
on it. I did. I spent $300 in the auction on a RuPaul Drag Race signed picture.
You pretend like you don't know anything about RuPaul's Drag Race, but we know you're a secret fan, doll.
That's true, but it was all to a good cause. To a very good cause.
It was an original signed RuPaul poster. It's probably worth more than $300, so suck it up, princess.
Oh, no, I was happy to take it. It's just afterwards I was like, well, now I can't buy anything else.
Any booze.
Can't do anything. I've just got to leave now.
No, it was a great day, and thanks to everyone who came along and supported, and we'll see you all the third Saturday of October next year.
Yeah, absolutely. But what is on the show tonight?
Tonight we will be talking with a few people this evening, actually. We're going to be talking about smoking in our LGBTIQ communities. Firstly, some of the projects that Quit Victoria are working on with Thorn Harbour Health and Minus 18, and speaking with someone from Quit Line, as well as someone from the community who has recently quit smoking, or who has quit smoking, and they're going to tell us about their journey.
And full admission, I'm a smoker, so this is going to be, you know, an all-out kind of like battle for me.
Dull, you may as well get it out there from the start, because the last time we did a smoking show together, we had to come out again, didn't we? It was a whole new coming out.
Exactly.
I'm a social smoker, which means I'm only 50% as bad as you.
I'm only a social... Well, I only smoke when I drink.
Which is, yeah, we won't go there. This is a healthy show.
Exactly. Well, that sounds brilliant. So I hope everyone stays tuned. And coming up next is one of our favourite tracks, but this is Joy 94.9. This is Well, 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 and you're listening to Joy 94.9. We are now joined in the studio by Jeremy Wiggins from Quit Victoria, from the Cancer Council Victoria. How are you going, Jeremy?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I guess let's just dive right in. Everybody kind of knows, well, not everybody really kind of knows, but research consistently tells us that there's high rates of smoking amongst our communities when compared to the general population. So does the research tell us why that is the case?
Yeah, it's absolutely true that smoking rates in the LGBTIQ community are almost triple that of the general population, which is quite alarming. Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah, so the national average of people who smoke is around 12.9%, and that's most recent stats. And the stats for the LGBTIQ community is around 35%. However, in some studies that where there's been cohorts of just transgender people, it's seen to even be up to around 44% of transgender populations are smoking. And obviously with our communities, there's always issues with data collection. Not all national or population health data sets adequately include people of diverse gender experience. But what we can glean from the research that's available is that, yeah, our communities are smoking at much higher rates.
And so why do you think there's a discrepancy?
Well, what we do know from any community that experiences disadvantage of any kind is likely to be smoking at higher rates. Now, that's the same for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. It's the same for people who are living in poverty, people experiencing mental health issues. And again, it's the same for the LGBTIQ community. And that's largely because of experiences related to homophobia, transphobia, social isolation, history of trauma. It can be linked to high rates of poor mental health. And with regard to social disadvantage and how those indicators increase the risk of smoking, it can also be multiplied. So if you are someone who is Aboriginal or an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander and you are also gay, you are going to be experiencing higher rates of distress. And smoking and tobacco is an addictive substance, so it is highly addictive. However, it is not impossible to quit with the right support and the right help. So unfortunately, what we do see in our communities is high rates of smoking. And also, we have done a lot of research of our own, which I can get to soon, in terms of focus testing. But, you know, there is something to be said for our communities rejecting mainstream experiences of life, rejecting mainstream public health messaging, and forming your identity through a sense of rebellion or a sense of being different. And that certainly came up in some of our focus testing.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Aside from just even what we see when we go socializing as a community, and everybody spends most of their time in the smoking area, and that seems to be like the biggest sign for me, but also that's quite interesting observations that's come from the focus groups about the rebellious nature of the community, and that makes a whole heap of sense when you hear it, right?
Well, I mean, you know, our communities do experience, and this is evidenced, a lot of bullying, harassment, not necessarily included by family members all the time, and feeling on the outer. Associating a behaviour with being on the outer and taking pride in that can become a sense of safety and a sense of identity formation. And through our focus testing, we also found that particularly in LBQ women, so lesbian, bisexual, queer women, when attending events and feeling socially anxious, so anxiety actually has a big part to play in people potentially going for like social drinking as well as smoking. When you could leave a venue if you're feeling anxious, you know you're going to go and find someone to talk to over rolling a cigarette or asking if you can bum a cigarette of someone. It can be a point of social connection. And I think with our communities, the high rates of alcohol and drug use and also smoking, beneath a lot of that is around obviously self-medication around experiences of pain or trauma, but also about looking to belong to somewhere and to someone in a group, in a social group, and being able to like lubricate some of those social experiences. Don't throw a lubrication joke at me.
Lube. What projects do you have going on that are specific to the community to assist people who want to quit?
Yeah, so we at Quit Victoria are certainly working closely on this issue now. I mean, we want to tackle tobacco rates in all communities, and obviously in partnership with Thorn Harbour Health and Minus 18, we can't do this work without working with community-controlled organisations. So what we are doing in this space, what we started to do was firstly talk to the community organisations, and then we needed to build a knowledge and evidence base. So we've done rapid reviews of the existing literature, so we have a good understanding of what support services and programs and interventions have been used around the globe with these communities and what have been effective and what hasn't been. We've also done a range of focus testing. We had held 9 different focus test groups to understand the unique experiences, and we segregated those groups with how strongly people identify with the community, as well as age, as well as sexual identity and gender identity. So the trans and gender diverse focus group was different, and I stood in as a support person to help facilitate that group. And something that emerged out of the trans and gender diverse focus groups was something even slightly different to the other groups, and that is people sometimes don't feel like they're going to live for very long. They don't feel like they can project into the future and see themselves living well because of the negative experiences that they've had. So if you don't think that you're going to live a long, prosperous, healthy life, you know, fully included in society, sometimes you don't picture looking after your health for that long either. So there's something to be said for doing some of the upstream kind of primary prevention work with some communities that do experience experience that level of harm, I guess, around their resilience. So we have the evidence base, we have the partnerships. So some of the work that we're now doing is bringing it to the community and involving the community and co-designing our work with the community. And one of the first things that we did was participate in the Thorn Harbour Health's Women's Conference. So we presented on that work and we've been building partnerships and talking to community. And we recently launched, in partnership with the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, a short film competition called Keep the Vibe Alive.
And I think that that's a good point in terms of, like, the researchers building your evidence base upon which to then decide which projects are going to work with our communities and make them really specific. So I think after the next few little service announcements, we'll come back and we'll talk about the specific projects that we're going to get into, because I really want to hear about Keep the Vibe Alive. This is Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy. And tonight in the studio, we're joined by Jeremy from Quit Victoria. And earlier on in the show, Jeremy was starting to talk to us about some of the programs that Quit Victoria are running for the LGBTIQ community. And Jeremy, you mentioned the Keep the Vibe Alive project. Do you want to talk to us a bit more about that?
Yeah, super exciting. It's a short film competition for filmmakers, and it's in partnership with the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. And what we're doing at the moment, and people can submit an entry right now. Submissions close around the 15th of November, and you submit a concept that basically looks at challenging the glamorization of smoking in the LGBTIQ community and looking to stop interrupting important and intimate moments with a cigarette. So if you submit, our judges will pick five winners, and each winner will win $4,000 to actually create a short film. And those five films will then go into the running to be judged by the public through social media, and the top winner will win another $4,000 and be awarded that at the program launch of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. And also the winning film will be screened before every film at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. So that's an exciting way for the community to get engaged, for communities or community artists and filmmakers to be supported through this initiative. And what will lead on from that will be a broader public health campaign through the partnership with that we have with Thorn Harbour Health and Minus 18. So it's an exciting initiative.
That sounds really cool, and I've already come up with a whole bunch of concepts to make films myself, but apparently I'm not allowed to make one.
No, you're not.
No.
I have been so creative. I wish I could share them all with you.
You can share your ideas with people in the community, but your name cannot be on the submission.
Okay. Should I? Or,
well, why not? Why not share ideas? Share the love.
I had this really great idea because, you know, as someone who is a social smoker, sometimes I get kind of annoyed about people bumming cigarettes off me all the time.
Totally.
Do you feel me?
Absolutely.
So I decided that I would become the Ciggy Shark, like a loan shark, and I would go knocking on people's doors and start claiming back all of the ciggies that anyone had ever bummed off me over the years. Just like, I don't know, where knock, 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 Ciggy Shark's here, give me back me durries.
Well, it's a really good point that you bring up, because the cost of cigarettes are going up and up. And
it's an expensive habit, doll.
It's inexpensive, and it's one of the reasons why people look to quit. And what we do know, and I'm sorry to speak to the evidence, but the evidence does show us that actually 2 in 3 people want to quit smoking, but 1 in 5 are getting best practice smoking cessation support. So a lot of the work that we do is also train health professionals. Pharmacists, for example, we're launching a campaign this weekend that where you can go speak to your pharmacist about smoking support.
Cool.
But basically, another initiative that we will be working on is hosting a range of forums with various sectors, including the HIV, LGBTIQ, bloodborne virus sectors, around bringing all workers together to have a consistent approach to having brief intervention conversations with people. So what we need to see as a way to have broad-reaching impact is whenever someone is seeing a health professional, every person needs to be having a conversation with people about their smoking, because the more conversations occurring with people is going to trigger a successful quit attempt. People do actually want to eventually quit smoking. They just need it to be the right time and have the right support. Quitline is a good option, and soon we'll be hearing from Trent from Quitline.
So do you want to just quickly refresh for the listeners how they can get involved with Keep the Vibe Alive?
Yeah, so go to quit.org.au/MQFF. There's a video of moi talking about it. There's the terms and conditions there. It's all over Facebook at the moment, #KeepTheVibeAlive. or Google it. And another exciting element of that project is that during the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, we're going to have a panel event hosted by Benjamin Law with some really special guests on the panel talking about the role and responsibility of film, cinema and pop culture in portraying health messaging and what that looks like. Because there's also research that shows us that there are high rates of smoking and depictions of smoking in LGBTI cinema and film. And there's a whole history of big tobacco, so these big tobacco companies creating files targeting our communities and exploiting our community's disadvantage to make profits. And I'm just going to add in as well that still to this day, some of these big tobacco companies are actually making political donations to some of the large political parties that are working against LGBTI rights.
Wow.
So I think it's something to keep in mind in terms of a social justice perspective when we're fighting for our rights, that every cigarette could be doing you damage.
Literally. Well, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back shortly with Jeremy from Quit Victoria. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, the gayest station in the nation. God, that's so cliched, but it's so on point. Anywho, we are joined in the studio by Trent from Quitline. Trent, how are you going?
Hi, I'm good.
That's good. I guess what we wanted to do was, some people might have an outdated perspective of helplines or Quitline, or it's been around for such a long time, but I think the one thing that I want to know in relation to Quitline is, what is the most common reason that people call? Is it to quit? Is it to get help? Is it to get advice? Or is it just a diversity of calls of people going, how do I do it? What do I do? What's the process? Give me all the deets.
I guess there's a range of reasons why people call. So some people might think, or do tend to think, that the quit line is there to tell people to stop smoking, but that's not the case at all. We're here to support people who are thinking about making changes for themselves and to support them through the process over time. So I guess the most common reason people call is they have been thinking about their smoking, they've been looking at it, they've been wondering, how it's affecting their health or often looking at their budget, and they are thinking of quitting and they want support, and that's what we're there to do. Sometimes they've been referred by doctors or other health professionals after talking about their health. Sometimes they're calling in as soon as the price goes up because that's made them think about their budget.
Damn, makes me think.
Yep. It's an expensive habit.
And I guess, is there something specific that prompts people to make a call? You sort of said that the majority of people call are sort of thinking about quitting or a price hike or something along those lines. But is there something that really initiates that change that's kind of core to everyone, whether it's I want to be healthier or I want to live longer or I want to save money? Or is there something that's a common thread, or is it very different for every single caller?
I think there's a diverse range of reasons why people decide to call and why people decide to take action on their smoking. Those are some of the common ones. But we have a real diverse range of callers, from teenagers right up to, I just spoke to someone in the 80s.
Sometimes, oh, wow.
Even kids at primary school will call.
Kids at primary school?
Yeah, that's often when they start experimenting with it, or they're worried about their parents smoking. So sometimes people call in because they're worried about a friend or a family member and they want to support them. We get those calls too and are happy to help those people.
I never would have thought about that.
Do you ever get someone call up and they're like, I have a cigarette in my hand right now, talk me down?
Hey, that's
we do. Or actually, the more common one is they're in the process of quitting, because we follow up with people through the first month or two, and they might be about to slip up, or they're really compelled to buy a packet, so they call in to help us to intervene. So yeah, we do have those kinds of conversations.
Do you tell them to like make a cup of tea and eat a Tim Tam or something like that? Like, what kind of advice can you give someone in that moment?
Well, first we like congratulate them for calling and intervening with themselves, because picking up the phone is already the first step in that. And yeah, we might tell them, what else could you do? Like, what do you think the cigarette would do to you? So do for you. So we examine the reasons why they think it would be a good idea to do it, and then try to find, help them come up with other things that might meet that need. And often it is stress relief. That's a really common one.
Yeah.
And so we talk them through that. Hopefully by the end of the conversation, their stress levels have reduced and they've thought of other ways to manage it, and reminded themselves in the midst of longing for it why they they're not going to do it because they've got more reasons to not buy the packet. So those conversations are common.
Yeah.
And I think you've really highlighted a point that when people think of the quit line, they think of it as a support line, but it's not just a support line. You've got people inquiring about friends or they're thinking about other people in their lives. So what is your main role when someone calls up? Obviously, there is an element of support. There's an element of education or referrals or whatever it might be. Tell us more about what your role. So if I was to call you up and I'd be like, hey, I'm Joe Blokes. I'm not going to give you my real name, even though it's Adam. But I'm thinking about my friend Renee, who's a smoker. What can I do?
Support is our main role. Yeah, we help people understand their smoking and understand their triggers. And for, you know, if I got a call like that, I'd, if they didn't have much understanding of why their friend might be smoking, say, often people call in, they've never smoked themselves, but say their partner smokes and they want to help them quit. So we try to help them understand why their partner's smoking, that probably on some level they do want to quit, but they're getting things out of smoking and what they can do to support their partner and open up that conversation and support within that relationship, help them rehearse things that they might say, questions that they might ask. I think we take on a whole lot of roles. Sometimes I feel like a cheerleader, so most of our callers are making some kind of quitting attempt. And we're cheering them on and encouraging them, reinforcing all the great things that they're doing, but also helping them learn when they stumble. People are often very hard on themselves if they have a slip-up, or they think that I've had a cigarette, I've failed, I have to go back to the beginning, I feel so weak. So we work to help build up their self-confidence and help them realise what they've learned from the slip-up. It's absolutely, they haven't gone back to the start. They can recover from slip-ups and keep going. A slip-up is not a relapse. So I feel like I'm a cheerleader, a supporter. I'm also providing information, a little bit of education, meeting the needs that the caller has and really collaborating with them on their decisions.
I think you make a very cute cheerleader in your sparkly top as well, Trent.
And I guess what factors would be most important in making someone successful in their attempt to stop smoking?
It's really variable, but I guess motivation is right up there. So we get people to talk about like all the reasons they've got to quit, also all the things they like about smoking, to try to weigh up that and see which side is bigger and how they can strengthen the part of them that really wants to quit. Getting support is really key too. Often people do it alone and they feel like they've got a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other, and they're constantly in conflict, and sometimes the devil wins and then they feel weak and punish themselves and around it goes. So externalising their reasons to quit and by talking to us, using us as a sounding board, tends to be really helpful. And the research does show that if you talk about your progress with someone outside your social circle through that first month, people that do that have higher quitting success.
Awesome. Trent, that's been really informative, and thank you for coming on to speak to us about Quitline.
We've still got a couple more questions for him after the song, though.
Oh, great. Well, we'll be back soon. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy.
So, Trent, I guess one of the things that you mentioned before the song was the fact that you do follow up with the people that call through. Mm-hmm. And my understanding or my perception or presumption was that it was just basically one way. So how do you follow up? What's the process of following up with people that have called you?
We've got a callback service that people are in the midst of thinking about quitting or about to make an attempt, we offer to them, and it's essentially a weekly call for about 6 weeks. The calls are scheduled according to what's considered a relapse prevention schedule, so to optimise the best time to call generally to prevent people from relapsing. So yeah, we're following up with people with 6 to 8 calls, sometimes more, sometimes less.
God, I haven't had a relationship that long.
So, I mean, this is pretty basic stuff, but what is the number that people can call if they want to call Quitline?
Yeah.
It's all over the cigarette packets and the tobacco
pouch. I've never noticed.
It's 137848, so it's 13 quit, 137848, and we're there 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Friday all year round.
And you mentioned in that the follow-up component around triggers of relapse. What are some of the triggers that make people relapse?
Stress of various kinds is the most common one, especially unexpected stress. So, yeah, we really work hard with people around developing other ways to manage their stress. Often they will see the cigarette as at least a short-term way to manage that. And it's a, you know, it's a tool, so we help them find other tools to manage that. Sometimes it's nostalgia. Sometimes people say, oh, I was quit for so long, I deserved a reward, and the first reward that popped into my mind was a cigarette. Meeting friends that you hadn't seen for a while who were smokers, and then you just get drawn back in and you tell yourself, oh, just for tonight, and then you get hooked all over again. They're the common ones.
Dang. Well, I mean, that's all of me, really.
I couldn't count how many times I've quit and started again, so I can really relate to that.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. Are there high rates of relapse within the community? Like, because as you said, people sort of punish themselves. They've got an angel and a devil on the shoulder, and then if they have one, they go, oh, I'm back to square one. But are people relapsing at really high rates, and does it take more times to start quitting to get it done successfully?
Generally speaking about all smokers, there are high rates of relapse. There's an argument that nicotine addiction is a chronically relapsing condition for a period of someone's life, but each attempt gets people learn more, and that's what we're doing, helping them learn the most out of each previous attempt in their relapse, so that each further attempt is more likely to be permanent. To really decrease rates of relapse, the gold standard quitting support is probably using a product and some kind of coach or counsellor, and that's our role.
So by product, Trent means like nicotine replacement therapy.
Oh, yeah.
So like using a spray or combination therapy like patches or lozenges, which some of them are actually quite low cost now and on the PBS. So the best chance of quitting success is combination therapy of behavioural support or coaching like Quitline or going to see some counselling. So you need that as well as using nicotine replacement therapy.
And when you mention on the PBS, you mean someone can go and get a prescription and get...
That's right, yeah.
Cool. And that means it's cheaper than buying it over the counter?
Correct.
Cool.
And it's nicotine replacement therapy or the anti-craving drugs. They're sort of two groups of products that have the best evidence behind them, and both are basically available from the doctor on prescription at a subsidised rate. And we can, you know, we tell people all about the products and the different methods of quitting too. We can explain that to people.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me asking, are some of the people who work at Quitline reformed smokers? Like, do they come from a place of understanding?
Many of us do, yeah. We come from diverse backgrounds. It's not so much a peer support model, so often we get that question, have you smoked? And we kind of have to say, well, you know, I don't want to tell you whether I have or haven't and how I quit, because we want to use evidence to maximise your chances of quitting. And there's no one way that really works for absolutely everyone. But, yeah, a lot of us there have smoked, and those of us who haven't have family members, friends that have smoked, and, we know a lot about it from a lot of different perspectives.
And my assumption is no one there smokes at the minute.
Not as far as we know, no.
They're not out about it if they do.
Absolutely not. Well, I mean, that was absolutely fascinating. So, Trent, thanks very much for coming in. And I guess after the next song, we'll have another guest. And then I've got a question for all three of you.
Awesome. We'll be back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy.
I guess I've got one final question for the both of you. If there was one key message that you wanted to communicate to smokers or those who are contemplating to stop, what would it be?
Well, quitting smoking is actually one of the best things that you could do for your health and well-being. And that's all-encompassing around your physical and your mental and emotional health and well-being, but also for your financial health. Don't do it alone. Seek support. Trent, what would you say? What's the best support?
We're the best support. Quitline 137848. I'd also like to add there's quite a number of LGBTIQ counsellors working there, so we really want to support the community.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really important as well, and it goes back to sort of the evidence base that Jeremy was talking about around some of the reasons and the disparity in terms of the smoking rates and reasons as to why people are doing it. And having a counsellor on the other end of the phone who understands the complexities of being from our community, I think really assists. So, yeah, it's fantastic to hear.
Well, it's been fantastic having you both on the show. That's Jeremy Wiggins from Quit Victoria and Trent from Quitline. Really great to speak to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Wonderful.
Yes, absolute pleasure. So, well, I guess we'll have to have you back when we've got a few more things going on in terms of the projects that you've got working on, Jeremy. So I think it'll be fantastic.
Awesome. And we're going to go across now to speak to Parker, who is a reformed smoker and also a member of the community.
Hey, Parker. Hey, Yowen.
Good, thanks, Adam. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Look, I guess we've had a perspective from Jeremy and someone who works on the Quitline, Trent, and I guess we wanted to get a bit of an insight for someone who is a reformed smoker, because Renee and myself are current smokers. So what made you decide to quit or want to quit in the first place?
You know, I was a smoker for 5 years, and I remember sitting down and I was trying to work out how I was going to pay for my next holiday. And I worked out that over the last 5 years, I spent over $15,000 on cigarettes. And when I realized that was the amount of money, that was actually the lump sum of all those small purchases I'd made, I realized that was a really small change I could make, help my savings out without making too much of an adjustment to my life.
That's, yeah, you're now starting to make me think about money, and I'm not liking it, but fair call.
You're making me feel pretty bad too, but that's good, that's good. Yeah, and very mature of you to make a decision like that.
Yeah, I mean, maturity, like I've tried to quit so many times, and it really just takes, you know, saying no consistently to really overcome smoking, I think, and that's the hard bit, is continuing to say, no, I'm not going to go for a cigarette, rather than, you know, putting your foot down one day and saying, no, I'm not a smoker anymore. It's those little moments that are a part of your routine that really take a bit more willpower to overcome.
And how many times do you think you tried to quit before you were actually able to sort of like put your foot down and have that sort of affirmation in your mind?
Good question. I would say probably about 4 or 5 times. I once lasted 60 days, and that was not too bad, I don't think. But the other 3 attempts would have been no more than like 4 or 5 days.
So how long has it been this time, Parker?
Yeah.
So far it's 115 days.
Wow. Maybe we need to get the applause. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's really impressive, and I've been in that situation before where I have quit and started and quit and started, and now I'm at a place where I'm just socially smoking, and I have made myself feel okay about that.
Yeah.
But after speaking to the boys earlier in the show, I've realized it's really not. So did you seek any assistance at all, Parker, whenever you wanted to quit?
Yeah, like I went and saw my doctor about it. And I went on Champix. Champix is the medication to stop you from smoking. And that just takes the choice out of it, because if I was going to smoke, then it was going to make me very ill. Mm. So I didn't even have that option for the first 30 days. And it really does help you to take care of the cravings after the first 30 days, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I had minimal side effects. I was a little bit sick the first day, but besides that, my body got used to it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'd heard there was some pretty crazy side effects.
Yeah, vivid dreams.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, for some people it's really not right. For others, yeah, I guess it really worked for me.
And so what was the hardest part of it all, of the entire process? Was it sort of not being able to hang out with your friends in the smoking area, or was it meeting someone and going, well, you're a smoker and I don't smoke anymore, so therefore I can't be with you? Or, I mean,
it's all part of it.
Yeah. Mm. Like what do you think was the hardest part for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first 30 days is the hardest part for me. Hands down. Like, after you make it through that first 30 days, you will not keep smoking. I can almost guarantee it. Because you've got the willpower after that, and you've trained yourself to not smoke at that point, just as you've spent years kind of getting that routine up of having a cigarette all the time. Once you get used to saying no, it gets easier and easier. But the hardest part, just breaking the routine. Yeah, finding replacements and finding what replacements really work for you. So I think a lot of smokers smoke out of boredom, or just out of that morning routine driving to work or having a 10-minute break. I swap that out for taking a walk around my local shopping centre, or I still go and sit outside all the time, so I really enjoy that. But I was fortunate enough to be in a place in my life where smoking didn't hold much value for me anymore. And it's not fair to say that, you know, smoking's awful, it's terrible, it has no benefit, because there are a lot of social benefits that come along with smoking. You know, there was a time in my life where my entire circle of close friends were smokers, and we would sit out and we would smoke and we would drink and we'd have a wonderful afternoon, you know?
Yeah,
and each
absolutely.
Of those pieces fit together. Yeah,
and I think that goes onto the next question in relation to: mm-hmm. Do you think that the LGBTIQ plus community is more centralized around smoking?
I don't believe we are. I think we may think so because I think we're a more health conscious demographic. But I know that, you know, of the people I know in my life, especially growing up in a rural community, I think that the rural community is a lot more centralized around the smoking issue, whereas people in metropolitan areas, the percentage difference and the attitude towards smoking is very, very different. So I would say that maybe a lot of LGBT people who have moved in from rural areas tend to be smokers. And I find that a lot fewer feel the need to conform within their social circles to smoking.
Mm. So if there was one key message that you wanted to communicate to smokers out there in the community or people wanting to stop, what would that be, Parker?
Take a step back. Evaluate the value that smoking has for your life. I think that that's a really key point. It's really easy to keep smoking, and everyone knows, every smoker knows that they shouldn't smoke, but, you know, really evaluate the benefits that it gives you in your life at the moment and think back to the benefits that it once gave you, and has that changed, you know? Has the addiction stuck around and this habit stuck around to the point where you're not getting any benefits anymore from it? And if so, like anything else in life, just drop it and make it through the first 30 days. That's awesome. The thing. Make all of those little no's along the way and commit to continuously saying no and just get to 30 days.
Cool. Well, that's been really great information. Thanks for coming on the show, Parker. This
You're
has
welcome.
Been Well, 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 and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
So I guess before we wrap up, the one thing that we'd like to do is congratulate Mr. Jeremy Wiggins for his phenomenal win at the Globe Awards last Friday. And what was it for, Jeremy?
LGBTI Person of the Year. Thank you. It's an honour. Thanks.
I wish everyone could see your wee face right now. Proud as punch.
I look like an emoji.
Yeah.
No, what are they called? Bitmoji?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how were the awards? I wasn't able to attend, but you were both there.
I had fun,
yeah,
obviously.
It was a great night. Thank you to Globe for having us and always putting on quite a bougie, beautiful evening for everyone.
It's nice that there's a chance for the sector to get dressed up so beautifully and be around each other and celebrate everyone's hard work and achievements for the year.
Yep.
I think it's really important to do that, particularly so the last few years it's been really difficult politically. And I think that does have a real big impact on our health and well-being, and it's nice to just sort of, you know, put it down for a little minute and for a night and look around and say, hey, you're all doing a great job. And even if you don't make it to win an award, there's still a number of finalists, and even those who are nominated and those in the room, it's a chance for everyone to come together and sort of support each other and celebrate our hard work.
Yeah.
Oh, you can say that because you won. Like, otherwise you'd be like, oh yeah, it was all great, it was all good.
Yeah, but, it was all right, the food was good.
Congratulations to whoever.
Thank you, Globe.
Yeah, thanks, Globe.
Fantastic. Well, look, that's our show.
Looking after the health and well-being of the LGBTI community. This is Well, Well, Well. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.